We're holding on page Tzadik Gimel in Brachas Ois Kuf Chof Vav, the bottom of the page. Continuing with the Mishnah said, Ala Zikim, when a person sees Zikim, which we're going to define in the Gemara what those are, Vala Zvois, we're also going to define what those are, they're earthquakes, Vala Omim, and thunder, Vala Ruchos, and winds, we're going to say in the Gemara we mean particularly strong winds, like hurricanes or tornadoes, Vala Brokim, and for lightning, for all of those, for all of those you say the Baruch Shekoichim Grasim Olam. Actually, what it says in Shulchan Aruch is there are a number of these, page Tzadik Gimel at the bottom. A number of these, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you have your choice whether to say Oisam Aisim Bereshis or Shekoichim Grasim Olam. So it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe brings in Hilchos Birkas Hananim, that the Velt has developed the minhag to say, on lightning, you say Oisam Aisim Bereshis, and on thunder, you say Shekoichim Grasim Olam, on the grounds that they usually come together, as the Gemara is going to point out, and why should you say the same bracha twice? As far as some of these other things, for example, as far as Zikin, which we're going to say are either meteorites or comets, So the minhag olam is also to say on them oisam aisim bereshis rather than shekoichu grasim olam. If you look in the siddur in the Tilos Hashem siddur between shacharis and benching, when they have a page of the brachos over there, they just say flat out for those you say oisam aisim bereshis without even mentioning the option of shekoichu grasim olam. Anyway, the Gemara says my zikim. What is the definition of zikim? Omer Shmuel koich v'deshavit. So Shmuel says it means a star of shavit. So shavit literally means like a shavit, like a rod, like a staff. So Rashi describes that it's a star that shoots in the sky from one place to another and long and skinny like a stick. So the Pashtus Rashi is describing shooting stars, meteorites. The Rambam, on the other hand, defines it as a star with a tail, which is more like a comet. In Shulchan Aruch, actually, it brings both of them. The fact is you say the bracha on both of them. But Omer Shmuel, and Shmuel says in this connection, Nihiri li shvili d'rakia kishvili d'nahaudah. I'm as familiar with the paths of the heavens as with the paths and byways in Nahaudah. Nahaudah was Shmuel's native city. He grew up there. He was the Rosh Hashiva there. So he, of course, knew the city inside out. So he's saying, just as much as that, I know all the ins and outs of the heavens. He was an expert astronomer, we find in various places in Shas. Levarmi koich v'deshevet, except he says, for this koich v'deshevet, lo yadayna my niu. I don't know what it is. And the fact is, even now, you know, the modern scientists have a hard time making much out of comets and then or meteorites. They're very unpredictable and then so on and so forth. Ugmiri, however, the Gemara continues. Maybe this is Shmuel still speaking. Maybe this is the Stam of the Gemara speaking, page 186. Ugmiri, we have the Kabbalah, Deloy over Kisla, that a koich v'deshevet, whatever it is, a meteorite or a shooting star, will never pass through Kisla. Kisla is a mazel, is a constellation in the sky. In Hebrew, it's called Ksil, and it's mentioned under that name in a couple of places in Tanakh. The Gemara is going to quote soon a couple of psukim that mention it. Most of the Mephoshim say that Ksil is Orion. You look in the sky many times during the year, here in New York, not so much, because you can't see stars b'chlal, but out in the country, you'll often see a very prominent group of stars that you have three little stars in the middle, fairly close to each other, and four making a square around it, and that constellation is called Orion. It's fairly well visible in most of the world. The Gemara is going to establish soon that heat comes to the world through the influence of Ksil. We know Hashem sends down influence to the world, and it's mediated through that. Hashem sends it down through the tzinner of the various stars and planets and all, which is how the Gemara talks all over the place, how the kechavim mazolos have effects on people. We know that the goyim in olden times made the mistake of thinking that they have independent power and therefore they worship them. We know they're only kagaz and yadachotze, but the point is they are the conduit through which Hashem sends Ashpa to the world. So the Gemara is going to explain soon that Kisla or Ksil is the conduit through which the world has heat. So now the koich v'deshevet, the Gemara is saying it never passes through Kisla. The over Kisla, Chorev Alma, if it did, the world would be destroyed because the combination of the power that goes through Ksil and the power of the koich v'deshevet together would be too much for the world. You'd have global warming, Lamazogin. Yeah. So the Gemara asks about Kachazina de Omar. What? Yeah, the wheel. Yeah. So the Gemara says, the fact is, we do sometimes see a koich v'deshevet passing through the constellation of Ksil. The answer is no. Zihara or zivehu de'avar. all you see is the glow of it is passing through. It looks to you from looking from the ground level as though the koich b'deshevet actually passed through there. But if you were there on the scene like this, when you see things from Earth, you always see they're a little bit displaced in the sky relative to where they really are. It's called parallax. So if you were actually there near the koich b'deshevet, then you would see it doesn't actually pass through Ksil, but from your vantage point on Earth, it looks like it is. The Gemara continues, Rav Huna Bered Yer Veshua Amar. Rav Huna Bered Yer Veshua says, now Rashi explains that what Rav Huna Bered Yer Veshua is going to give is a different definition of Zikin. Again, we have the first definition of Zikin is that it means a koich v'deshevet, which is either a meteorite or a comet. Now, Rashi says Rav Huna Bered Yer Veshua is going to be giving us a different definition of Zikin. Vilan who demikra demigalgal. What happens is, now the Gemara tells us in Chagiga that there are seven heavens, seven levels of the heavens, and the lowest one closest to Earth is called Vilan. Literally, Vilan means a curtain. And the purpose of it is, the Gemara says, it doesn't really have any function. It just it screens the ones above it. Then you have the ones above it contain the sun and the moon and the planets and malachim and various other things. So now what happens is, every so often there's a rip in Vilain, de Megalgal, and it gets rolled up, so you see the glow of Rakia, of the heaven above that, which is where the sun and moon and stars are located. You see a streak of the Rakia shining through this rip in Vilain, and therefore that appears to you like a comet or a shooting star. So according to Rashi, that's a different definition of what Zikin are. According to Tosfos, is bothered by the question, though. In that case, why did the Gemara first go through this whole thing about that the koich v'deshevet never passes through Kisla, and what it means that we don't see it itself, we see its glow. So rather, Tosfos says, Rav Huna Bered Yer Veshua is not coming to give a different definition of Zikin. He agrees that Zikin are meteors or comets. He's saying, why is it, you're asking how it is that we sometimes see them passing through Ksil, and yet the world continues to exist? Because Rav Huna Bered Yer Veshua says, it's not that what you're seeing at that point is you have a rip in Vilain, and that's what you see in Ksil. So you think from the Earth that it looks to you like a comet or a shooting star, but in fact, it's not. In fact, it's a rip in Vilain, which is something else entirely, and there's no problem with that being Ksil, same as it could be any place else in the sky. The Gemara continues, Rav Ashi gives a different explanation. How is it, going back to again, how is it that we see that a koich v'deshevet passes through Ksil, and yet the world still exists? So Rav Ashi says, koich v'deshevet hu de'okim ahai gisa b'kisla. What happens is a star moves from one side of Kisla, v'chozi le'chavre mehach gisa. Another star on the other side of Kisla, of Ksil, sees it, umivis, and it gets frightened, like it thinks, so to speak, like that star is coming to take over my territory. So it moves, umersi, commander over. So you, from Earth, it looks like a star went from one side to another, but really, in other words, if you were to realize that it's actually just one star moving and then another star moving in response. It's sort of like, for us, when we have nowadays, you have these kinds of things. You sometimes have like lights that are the displays of lights that flicker on and off, like you have at amusement parks and other such things. It becomes much easier to understand. You see those things and it looks like the lights are traveling all around, but really, if you look at it carefully, it's just they're winking on and off. So Rav Ashi is saying, now you have the same kind of thing happens over here. It looks to you like the star has actually traveled from point A to point B. Really, it's just a star winking over here and another one winking and moving over here. So to you, it looks, when you don't look at it carefully, then you think it means it actually moved from point A to point B. The Gemara continues. Shmuel Rami. Shmuel pointed out a contradiction between Psukim. Ksiv, one pasuk in Eov says, Oisa Osh Ksil Bachima. This is one of the speeches in Sefer Eov where Eov is telling his friends, you're telling me that Hashem runs the world and I shouldn't complain against him? I know good and well Hashem runs the world. For example, Hashem makes Osh, Ksil, and Kima, which are all various constellations or groups of stars. Osh is usually translated as the bear. There are actually two constellations nowadays that they call the bear, Ursa Major and Ursa Minor. Some people may be familiar with them as the Big Dipper and the Little. The Big Dipper is part of the Big Bear. The Little Dipper is the Little Bear. Anyway, so Osh is one of those. Ksil, we just said most of the Mephoshim explain, is Orion. The Kima and Kima, which most of the Mephoshim explain, is a cluster of stars called the Pleiades. There's six or seven major stars in there that are easily visible. And then the Gemara is going to mention further on that there are a bunch of others. If you ever see the Subaru logo, that's actually a depiction of that cluster of stars, because that's the name of that cluster in Japanese. Anyway, Subaru, yeah. So the next time you see a Subaru, and you'll notice the nameplate over there with the six stars on it, that it represents that group of stars, the Pleiades. So most Mephoshim explain that Kima is the Pleiades. The Eben Ezra on Iyov discusses some other possibilities over there. He brings a possibility that it may be a particularly bright star in one of the other constellations. Anyway, the point is that the Pasuk is listing Ksil before Kima. Uchtiv, then you have a different pasuk in Amos, where the Navi is trying to make the people realize you got to listen to the Eibishter. He runs the world and he does things you can't possibly do. Oisek Kima Uksil. So there he lists them in the opposite order, that Hashem makes Kima and Ksil. So why is it that one pasuk puts Ksil before Kima and the other one puts Kima before Ksil? So Hoketzad, so what does that mean? So the answer is, really what it means is, in other words, that each one is equal to and offsets the other. Al-Derech, like you have actually in this week's parasha, you have usually, it says Moshe and then Aaron. In this parasha, you have one place where it says who, Aaron or Moshe, and Rashi brings from the Gemara that it means that Malamet Shkulim, that this teaches us that they're actually on an equal level. So therefore, in one place, the Torah puts Aaron first to show that. The same way over here, the point is that Kima and Ksil are equal and opposite to each other, and one offsets the other. That's why the Pasuk puts them in different places in different orders. Hoketzad, so what does this mean? Il mole chamasa shel Ksil, if it weren't for the heat that comes to us through Ksil, where Ksil is more visible in the sky during the summertime, lo miskayim amu mepnet sima shokina, shokima. If it weren't for that, the world wouldn't be able to exist because of the cold that comes through Kima. So Kima is more visible in the sky during the wintertime. Hashem sends cold to the world through the medium of Kima. But you need Ksil to offset that, because otherwise the cold that we'd get from Kima would be too intense. The Umolet Sina Shokima, and vice versa, if it weren't for the cold from Kima, the world wouldn't be able to manage because of the heat of Ksil, because it would be overwhelmed. So in other words, Hashem made them equally and opposite to offset each other. Ugmiri. Now the Gemara continues. We also have the Kabbalah. Ilav ukta de akrava de manach b'nahar dinur. If it weren't for the fact that the tail of akrav, Rashi explains akrav is another name for Kima. So whether we're saying that Kima is the Pleiades, or whether it's some other group of stars or some other individual star, there's a group of stars in it that looks like an akrav, that looks like a scorpion. If it weren't for the fact that the tail of that, the manach b'nahar dinur, that it's located in Nahar dinur. Nahar dinur is actually mentioned in a pasuk in Sefer Daniel. It describes there Hashem sitting in judgment to judge the nations, ba'achos hayamim, and it mentions Nahar dinur, a river of fire, comes out from before Hashem. In context of our Gemara, it may mean the Milky Way, or it may mean some other thing like that. Anyway, whatever it is, if it weren't for the tail of that located in Nahar dinur, then then anybody who was stung by a scorpion would never survive. Because a scorpion, we had earlier in the Masechta, the bite of it is a cold bite. Sting of it, the poison, the venom from it is a cold kind of venom. So now what we're saying is, given that Kima is how cold, is how the world gets its coldness at the appropriate times, but because in Kima you also have Akrav, because you also have this group of stars that resembles an Akrav, and that is the ruchniistic source of scorpions down here on Earth. So therefore, the intensity of the cold of Kima would make it that the venom of an Akrav down here on Earth would be so intense that nobody would ever survive. So what did the Eibishter do? He moderated it by putting the tail of that into Nahar Dinur, into the Milky Way, or whatever Nahar Dinur is exactly, and that moderates it, and that makes it that now, here on Earth, the poison of that kind of creature is not so intense, and therefore a person can survive. Marsha discusses over here that, so Rashi is saying that the Akrav over here is another name for Kima, or it's another part of Kima. Marsha says that that's, so that it's not so simple to say that. the Gemara is going to mention soon that Kima is actually part of Mazel Tle. On the other hand, what? Yeah, well, the Gemara is going to spell it out too. But on the other hand, Akrav. But what do you mean? No, there's a separate mazel called Akrav. Tle is the mazel of Nissan. Akrav is the mazel of Cheshvan. So Marashah says that no, what we mean is we don't mean over here Akrav as in part of Kima, like Rashi says. We mean the regular mazel Akrav, the regular mazel of Scorpion, which is the mazel of Cheshvan. What we're saying is that aside from the coldness of Kima, so we're mentioning, by the way, there's another mazel through which cold reaches the world, namely Akrav, and so Hashem moderated that by putting the tail of it in Nahar Din. And in fact, if you look on a star map nowadays, you'll see Taka that the tail end of Scorpio is Taka located in the Milky Way. So that fits. So that Taka fits very well. Then he also discusses that maybe in fact Kima itself, maybe Kima does not belong to Mazel Tle. Maybe in fact Kima is part of Mazel Akrav. So that might fit. Again, if we say that Kima is the Pleiades, Taka is fairly close to Mazel Tle. If you say like the Evan Ezra says on the Pesukim, that it may be some other star, he Taka mentions that it may be a prominent star in Akrav, then that would Taka fit much better with what Marashah is saying over here, that in fact Kima itself is associated with or part of Akrav. So Vahainu de Ka'omale Rachmana Le'iyav. So this whole thing explains what Hashem says to Iyav later in the Sefer. Hashem is telling Iyav, you think that I don't know how to run the world. You think that I confuse things, that I think that you're not Iyav, but rather Oyav, an enemy of mine. Let me explain to you a little bit of how I run the world, and you'll see that you don't have a clue. And Hashem tells him, Hasakasha Madanas Kima, could you tie up the bonds of Kima? Or could you untie the bonds, the ties of Ksil? So we see, in other words, that Hashem is telling him that Kima is like tied together. When you have cold things shrink. So Kima is described more as Madanos. Madanos is the word that means tied together. So in other words, Kima is associated with things being very closely tied together, like when things are cold and they shrink and shrivel up together. So are you able to undo that? Are you able to change that Kima should instead produce heat? No. And as far as Ksil, can you loosen the bonds of Ksil, where Ksil is more is a looser group of stars, and we're saying from them comes heat, as you have hot things usually expand and spread out. So are you able to pull them together? No. So don't think that you know better than me how to run the world. Okay, the Gemara asked my Kima, what is the name, what does the name Kima represent? It means that it has 100, that it has 100 stars in it. Meaning Rashi says there are more stars in it, but the main power of Kima is 100 stars over there. It's interesting, by the way, as once saw somebody point out, if you say that Kima is the Pleiades, as again, like most of the Mephoshim do, you really only have 6 or 7 prominent stars in it. And then, if you have very sharp vision, you might see a dozen of them or so. If you have a basic telescope, you might see a couple of dozen. But the Gemara is saying over here, there's 100 when Bepashtus, they didn't have anything like telescopes like we now have is it shows that they knew Beruchnius what's going on over there. So what's the deal with these 100 stars? Amri lo de mekanfon. Some say that these 100 are bunched up together. But amri lo de mivadron. Others say that they're spread out. In other words, of the several 100 stars that make up Kima, and we're saying out of those several 100, 100 of them are the main koyach of Kima. Are those all bunched together within one part of Kima, or are they spread out throughout the area in the sky that Kima takes up? My osh. Now we mentioned before the pasuk from Iyov mentioned besides for Ksil and Kima, which we just discussed, it also mentioned a constellation called Osh. So what is that? Amar Rav Yehuda Yusa. So it's the one that in Aramaic is called Yusa. My Yusa. So what is it relative to the Mazolos that we're more familiar with? Amru la Znav Tle. Some say that it's the tail of Tle. So you have the 12. Now you have. There's the well-known 12 Mazolos that we're familiar with. Those 12 actually. What's unique? Because we had earlier a few about 10 lines above, we had a pasuk from Iyov Oisa Osh Ksilochim Bechima. Yeah. So now the Gemara wants to know what is Osh exactly. So like this, you have the 12 constellations, the 12 mazalis that we're familiar with. Really, you have a lot of other constellations, a lot of other groups of stars in the sky. Nowadays, modern astronomers list 88 of them altogether. What it is the 12 that we know the names of best are the ones that are on the path of the sun around the earth. That path is called, in astronomy terms, it's called the ecliptic, because eclipses happen when the sun and moon are close to it. And you have the 12 mazalis that we're familiar with are the ones that are around there. But then you have a couple of dozen others. So now this Osh, the Gemara is saying, one opinion is that it's the tail of Tleh. So it's at the end of Tleh before Shur starts. But Amila Resha de Egla, others say it's the head of Egla, which is Shur, which is the next mazal. So you have Tleh and then Shur along the ecliptic. So we're saying that Osh is sort of between them. So it's either you can think of it as the end of Tleh, or you can think of it as the beginning of Mazel Shur. When we stab the commander Omer Znav Tleh. Now it's more logical, says the Gemara, to follow the opinion that says that it's the tail of Tleh. Dichtiv, because you have another posik also in Eov, where again, part of Hashem speaking to Eov and telling him, don't think you begin to understand how I run the world. Hashem tells him, Ayish al boneho sanchem, Ayish will be comforted for her children. So what does that mean? Al-Machasra. So we see that Ayish, which is another name for Osh, is missing something. It's like, so to speak, missing its children. Umischazi kimitraf uketarifa de torif. So it looks like something like a tarifa that was torif. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is it means as if something was missing and then they had to take a piece of it and they had to like bang it on, like to patch it up. So it looks, if you look at that group of Ayish, it looks like it almost as though like a piece was torn off it and then and then another piece was taken and made as a patch for it. So it looks irregular. So Rashi's first explanation is that the word torif means banging, like when you take metal and bang it and then beat on it in order to patch it up, then that's called torif. The second explanation Rashi says is that torif is that it looks, again, it looks like it was patched together, kamin chibur, as if it was stuck together. So according to that, torif might be related to the word like alei zayis torif b'fiha, which means a leaf. So according to that, it's like as if it's like a leaf is patched up over a hole over there. So the point is that since, as the Gemara is going to say, something was once removed from Ayish, from Osh, therefore it's more logical to say that that is the tail of Tleh, in the sense it looks like a tail, like it's sort of hanging off over there as if something was missing and it had to be patched up. So what happened? V'hodika azla abasra. So why is it that we always see that Ayish is following Kima? We said that So the straightforward way of understanding was, again, like Rashi said before, that Kima is part of Tleh. So Kima is part of Tleh, and Ayish, we're saying, is the end of Tleh. So why is it Taka in that order? Why is Ayish constantly following Kima? De Omra La Havli Bonai, Havli Bonai, because Ayish is constantly crying out to Kima and saying, give me back my children. So what happened? When the Eibishter was going to bring Mabel on the world, not al beis kechavim mikima, he took two stars out of Kima, the heavy Mabel oilam, and brought the Mabel on the world. In other words, when the Pasuk says that Hashem opened up Aruba is Hashemayim, the windows of Shemayim, so Marsha points out, miut rabim shnayim, the minimum Aruba is means at least two. There's actually a Gemara in Yuma that implies that there were four, but whatever. The point is that there had to be at least two. So therefore, Hashem took out two stars, and those are the windows of Shemayim through which the marble poured down. There was also the vote, since we said before that Kima is, Rashi explains in the Gemara on Rosh Hashanah, where it also talks about this, since we said before that Kima is the mazel of cold, and we know the marble water was boiling hot, so therefore the Ebishter took out two stars from Kima, thereby, took out two stars from Kima. Therefore, that weakened the cold of Kima. And now it made it possible for boiling hot water of the marble to come down, where otherwise usually Kima, if it was in its full strength, would usually moderate that. And that way Hashem brought the marble on the world. Now, when it came time for Hashem to close up those Arubas HaShemayim and make the marble stop, not to base kechavim in Osh v'sosma, then Hashem took two stars from Osh and closed it up. So now, ever since then, Osh is always telling Kima, I want my children back. So the Gemara asks, why did Hashem have to do it that way? The Lahad Rinu La Midilei, why doesn't Hashem just restore the same two stars they took out of Kima, put them right back in? The answer is that the expression goes, and we had at the beginning of the Masechta, Ein HaBur Mismale Mechul Yosei, a pit cannot be filled up from its Cholya. So now, yeah, we talked about over there a few different possibilities of what a cholya means. It can mean that when you dig a well and when you dig a pit of water and water flows into it from underground, it never becomes completely full. It can mean that you have all the dirt that you dug out to dig it. You can never exactly refill it because the dirt gets compacted and some of it gets lost and so on and so forth. So in any case, the point is that just putting back the two stars would not fill up the space from which those two stars have been taken out. You know, in modern astronomy, when they talk about that space is constantly expanding, it makes it a little easier to understand this Gemara on a Gashmistic level. The space where those stars were before the Mabul, a year later, that area of space is a bit larger, and therefore the stars won't fit it exactly anymore. Or another possibility, we know that that we have a rule that the accuser can't become the defender, so that Hashem should take the same stars that he took out from Kima in order to bring the Mabul and put those very same stars back to stop the Mabul. It wouldn't work. So we want to ask, so therefore he had to take two stars from another place, and so he took them from Osh. So the question is, okay, so why doesn't Hashem create two new stars for it? The answer is, and the pasuk says, "Ein kol chodesh shachas haShemesh." There's nothing new under the sun. So therefore, after Sheishes Mei Bereishes, the Eibush is not creating anything new. However, Amar of Nachum Meitzchok Osir Hakadosh Baruch Hu Lachzirama. In the future, Hashem will return Osh her two children. Dichtiv Va'ayish Abaneh Hasanchem. That pasuk from Eiv that we brought before says that Ayish will be comforted for her children. So eventually, there will be. So Baruch Shem explains, now, in Olam Hazeh, we say, in Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh, but La'asid Lavei, we have Sukkim that say that Hashem will create Shamayim Chadashim Ba'aretz Chadasha, so there'll be a whole new heaven, a whole new earth, so therefore the Eibushter can also create new stars at that time. What? The Yom HaMe'onah, on a cloudy day, what does that have to do with anything? I mean, in Bechlau, you know, obviously this whole Gemara is talking, besides that we're talking about the actual stars and what's going on with them, I mean, it also represents Ruchniistic concepts, how as a result of the Cheta, it's a Das and the Mabul and everything, you have things in the world that are incomplete and remain incomplete until the Eibishter, and then until Mashiach comes, Miyad Mamash, and then all of that will be restored to the way it was supposed to be. Next, the Gemara had said, Ba'ala's voice. The next thing we said that you make the bracha shekochu grasim ala olam for is zvois. So my zvois, omer of katina goyha, earthquakes. So the Gemara tells, so for those, when you experience an earthquake, then you say shekochu grasim ala olam. So the Gemara tells, Rav Katina haba ka'ozo b'urcha. Rav Katina was one time traveling on the road. Ki mata apischa debe oivatamya, when he passed by the doorway of an oiva tamya. Rashi explains, oiva means a baal oiv, somebody who practices oiv magic. Tamya means involving bones. And Rashi explains in some detail that the word tamya is the Aramaic word for bones. So this baal oiv used to use bones for to do his magic. So when Rav Katina was passing by the guy's door, gonach goyha, all of a sudden he heard a groaning of goyha. When you have an earthquake, a lot of times you'll have the earthquake, you have a very loud groaning noise from underground. As a, you know, the earth is moving, Parshat, so you have, yeah. I don't know, for myself, living most of my life in New York, and a couple of years before that in Eretz Yisrael, I've never really experienced that kind of earthquake. Actually, you know, the most you have is a little furniture shakes, but I suppose if anybody here has ever been in California or Japan or what have you, then they might have an idea what we're dealing with over here. Omar, sort of Katina says, Mi yoda oiva tamya hai goiha de gonach mahu. Does the oiva tamya, you the magician, do you maybe know what is this goiha? What's the ruchniistic cause of earthquakes? Now the Maharal has a long explanation over here in Be'er HaGoyla. He says that Rav Katina is not asking, and the Gemara is not asking, what are the physical causes of earthquakes? You want to know the physical causes of earthquakes? Fine, you go talk to a seismologist. They'll tell you about tectonic plates and all kinds of other fun stuff like that. The Gemara is wondering, what's the ruchniyistik approach? What's the ruchniyistik idea behind earthquakes? Given that the Eibishter created a world, that we should be able to serve the Eibishter in it, the world should be created in a perfect way. There's nothing about earthquakes that's necessary for, on the face of it, for the functioning of the world. It's not like, for example, other kinds of things. Let's say storms, Lamarshal, okay, you know, as bad as a storm is, it does some good, you know, it brings rain and whatever, but what good does an earthquake accomplish? That the Eibishter should have created the world to have earthquakes? That's the question that's bothering Rav Katina. Ramalei Kola. So the magician yelled back. He says, Katina, Katina, amai lo yadina. What do you mean? How should I not know? I'll tell you exactly what it is. When Hashem remembers his children who are living in pain among the goyim, then so to speak, Hashem sheds two tears into the Yamagodol, into the ocean, and you hear the sound of it from one end of the world to the other, and that's this noise that you hear of the earthquake. Now, Akosev brings a long thing over here from Reb Nissim Goin and from Reb Hai Goin, that they have a long discussion. We know that Emloid Musa Guf, the Eibishter has no Guf. How can you speak of the Eibishter crying tears and so on and so forth? So they explain at some length that this is all the Derech Moshel. What we're saying is that, for example, Hashem makes at times like this that clouds form and start raining heavily into the ocean, and those resemble tears. The rain, after all, resembles tears, and it's meant to evoke by us a feeling of, what are we doing here in Golos? We see that the Eibishter himself is acting in a way that he's troubled by it, Kavyachol. And the same thing with all the other explanations that the Gemara is going to give of what the cause of earthquakes is. They all mean, in other words, that the Eibishter causes things to happen involving natural forces, involving clouds, involving malachim, involving whatever, in order to show us how upset he is over the Churban and over the Golos. So we're saying, in other words, the point is not that it's a bad thing. On the contrary, in a way, it shows that Hashem is concerned about that. So it shows that even though we're in Golos for so long, it shows that Eibishter hasn't given up on us or forgotten about us. He still is mindful of us, and therefore he makes these things happen in order that we should realize that. So that's why it happens. And so you have a Gemara in Yevamos, actually, that says that any poronus, any punishment that comes to the world is all b'shvil Yisrael. Rashi explains over there the Yaram in order to make Jewish people fear so they should do tshuva. So in other words, like this, the Eibishter doesn't have to bring troubles on us Jewish people in order to get us to do tshuva. The Eibishter can bring that there's going to be troubles in the Philippines or in New Zealand or in whatever. And then we should, when we read about it in the news, it shouldn't just be, we read about it in the news and that's that. It should be that we have to take a lesson from it. This is the Eibishter telling us, that reminding us that he runs the world. Yeah. So that's the Beis Demar. It's also Hakosev brings over here something from the Rashba. He said, so the Rashba says, so what does that mean? Before the Churban, there were never any earthquakes. He says, no, the same way as, for example, we talk about the rainbow. The Bepashtos, there existed rainbows before the Mabul, but then came the Mabul, after the Mabul. And Eibishter tells Noach that from now on, it's going to be a symbol of the bris between me and you. The same way, there were earthquakes before, but now, after the Churban, then they have a new significance that they didn't have before. The Maharal discusses this whole point in some detail and discusses other points about it, again, because the world, after all, is incomplete. In the new edition of the Maharal, which we have on the shelves over here in the shul, they actually have a note over there from the Koshnitz and Magid that he says that it's also, you can say, the Eibishter knew in advance that there is going to be a Churban, that there is going to be a Golos, and therefore the Eibishter prepared in advance that such things are going to exist in the world, even though before the Golos, before the Jewish people actually went into Golos, you wouldn't be able to say that the Eibishter is, so to speak, upset about the Golos, because it hasn't happened yet, but nevertheless, the Eibishter is doing it in advance because he knows it's going to happen. Anyway, however, Omer of Katina, Oiva Tamya, Kadiv Hu Umile Kadiv. However, Rav Katina says, this magician with the bones, he's a liar and his words are lies. Because Ihochi, if that was so, if it's that the Eibishter, so to speak, has sheds two tears, goyha goyha mi barulai, then you shouldn't just have one noise of an earthquake. You should have twice. You should have two groaning sounds from the earth by earthquakes. So the Gemara says, "Ein uvaloihi." In fact, it's not so. Goyha goyha of it. As a matter of fact, it does make noise twice. You often have by earthquakes, you have foreshocks and aftershocks and main shocks and whatever. So you often do have two times. The reason why Rav Katina didn't want to say that this magician is correct in explaining it, because he didn't want that other people should be misled to follow him. If Rav Katina agrees that this magician knows the facts, then other people are likely, other Yidden are likely to go follow the guy as far as other things as well, which would be an issue because you're not even allowed to consult by a Baal Oiv, let alone to believe what he says. So why he asked the guy in the first place, Pashta Staka, for that reason, so that whatever the guy says, Rav Katina can put him down and make it known to everybody that you shouldn't pay attention to him. So then the Gemara says, Rav Katina didei Omar. Now, so Rav Katina on his own gave a different explanation. Not that it's two tears from Hashem, but rather kap of soifik zu agabzu. Hashem kavyochol is clapping his two hands together. We find in some places in Tanakh, as the Gemara is now going to bring a pasuk, where sometimes people would clap like this. We think of clapping as an expression of simcha, but sometimes also people would clap their hands together as an expression of tzar. Shenemav gamanik ata kapi al kapi, as the Navi says in Hashem's name, I will also strike my hand one against the other, v'hanichosi chamosi, and thereby I'll calm down my anger. So in other words, Hashem is saying, so to speak, that I'm going to take out my anger by clapping my hands together, and the clapping the hands together produces the noise of an earthquake. So again, Hakosev brings over here this long thing from Nissen Goin that the same idea. Now kapayim, besides meaning hands, can also mean clouds. They have a few pesukim. For example, when it says in Eicha Nisel Olveinu El Kapoyim, one meaning of it is we should lift up our hearts to the clouds and daven with kavana to the Eibishter. So therefore, when it says when he says kap of sofik zuar gabzu, it can mean that Hashem brings clouds which make a tremendous noise, and that's the noise that you hear of an earthquake. Rabbi Yonason or Nosson Omer Anocha Misaneach, Hashem kavyochol gives a krecht, and that krecht is the noise that you hear as an earthquake. Shenema v'anichosi chamosi b'mehinachamti, Hashem also says to Yechezkel, I'll place my anger against them, and then I will be calmed down. So in other words, like Hashem is saying, like when a person, so to speak, a person is angry, and he gives a big krech, he gives a big sigh, and that makes him feel better, and now that takes away his anger, so the Eibishter just says, I'm going to do that. So again, Hakosev brings from Nissen Goin that it means that Hashem causes a sound in the world that sounds like a sigh, and we perceive that as the sound of an earthquake, not that Hashem himself actually sighs, because again, Ein Loid Musagut. Apichsidus, we would actually say kind of the other way around. The ruchniistic source of a krechts comes from something milamila that we can't describe in human terms, but from it comes down here something that we hear as a krechts. Rabbanan Amri Boyet Barakia. The Chachamim say that Hashem Kavyochol kicks the heaven, and the noise of that kick is what we perceive as an earthquake. Shenema, as a pasuk in Yirmiyah says, Hedad Kederchim Yane Elko Yoshvei Aretz. Hashem will yell out Hedad, which is a lashon you find in a few places, and say for Yirmiyah it was like a chant, like when people are doing a repetitive job, like nowadays people might say like hey ho or whatever, you know. So in those times they would use a word like Hedad for that. So he'll yell out Hedad Kederchim, like people who are trampling on grapes. Yane, he'll call out Elko Yoshvei Aretz to all those who live on the earth. So in other words, Hashem is Kavyochol stepping on and trampling on the heavens like a person tramples grapes and yelling out hey dud as he does that. So again, it means, in other words, that Hashem causes some kind of noise in the sky which we perceive as the noise of an earthquake. And Rav Acha bar Yaakov amid doich kasirag b'tachas kisei hakavod, Hashem kamyochol presses his feet under the kisei hakavod, and the noise of that is the shaking from that is what we perceive as an earthquake. Shenema, Koyama Hashem, Hashemayim Kisi Ba'aretz Adem Ragloi. Hashem says, the heavens are my throne, the earth is my footstool. So to speak, Rashi says, like he's pushing his feet under the Kisei HaKavod, so the kick and the trembling reaches all the way down to the Adem Ragloi, down to the footstool, and therefore we feel that as an earthquake. Hakosev brings over here that it means, in other words, like Hashem makes it that the malachim, who are lower than the Shekhinah, they're like feet compared to the rest of the body, Hashem pushes the malachim together, and that causes a noise, and that's the noise we hear of an earthquake. The Maharal points out over there in his sefer over there in Be'er HaGoyla, he points out that each of these explanations is going further and further down in the body. you start off with tears, which are from the eyes at the top of the body. Then you have the hands. Then you have a krech, a sigh, which comes from the middle of the body. Then you have the the kicking, and then you have the feet. So going milamayla lamata, like coming closer and closer to earth, and representing closer and closer things to us of what are the actual, what are the ruchnistic causes of earthquakes. One more. Of Yeshayim, Shoyig Makolo Marish Elomis. Yeshayim, another one is that Hashem roars with a loud voice and makes all the worlds shake. Shenema, as you have a posit there in that same capital of Yibia, Hashem Morim Yishag, Hashem screams out, Hashem roars out from above, from the heavens, about the Churban and about the Golos. Again, expressing the idea that Kavyachol, Hashem is so pained by the Golos that he roars like a lion who's in pain. Yomiyem Mashiach Ge'ula, Fabez Tevis. So the Rebbe was talking about the idea of learning and finishing Torah or Mechutah Torah. So in order to bring about and accomplish Yomos Mashiach, we have to accept the Chalotis Tevis, and that would be especially that people accept the Chalotis Tevis to learn the entire Torah or Mechutah Torah from beginning all parts until the end, and through Limud Torah of these things, you bring down much quicker the Amshacha B'Poel. Halacha. Continuing on the halachas of Ha'etz, Hadama, and Shakol. We talked about things that are Ha'etz and things that are Shakol, things that are Hadama, things that are Shakol. Mushrooms, even though they grow from the moisture of the earth, they don't actually get their nourishment from the earth, they get their nourishment from the air. So they're not called Pri Hadama, so you say Shakol on them. Now, another din, you only say ha'etz or ha'adama only on something which is normal, which is good to eat raw and is normally eaten raw. If it's normally eaten cooked, even though you could eat it raw as well, then you only say its own bracha on it when it's cooked. And if not, if it's raw, then you only say shakol on it. So for example, actually, an interesting thing about carrots, the Altadeva mentioned that carrots on that basis would be shakol in the Altadeva's times. Nobody ate carrots raw. Rabbi Zalman Shimon said a generation ago, nowadays everybody eats carrots raw, therefore now raw carrots are adama. So vegetable soup, LaMarshall. So the point is, if these are vegetables that you would never eat raw, or that you normally don't eat raw, say for example, LaMarshall, turnips. So nobody eats raw turnips, LaMarshall, or raw zucchini. Or maybe zucchini, yeah, I don't know. But sweet potatoes maybe would be another example. Yeah, Swiss zucchini, sweet potatoes would be another example. So you would only say hadama on them if you're eating them cooked, but not if you're eating a raw sweet potato or a raw zucchini or whatever, then according to that, you would say shakol on it. The soup itself is something else. The soup is, if you're having a liquid, that's a different matter. That he's going to talk about later in the, yeah.
What do you do with the mix?
If you're eating the vegetables, so if you're eating it for the sake of the vegetables, then you say hadama on the vegetables. That's a different thing, yeah. Pickled things are considered like cooked for this purpose. So for example, you would say, hadama on pickled cabbage, sauerkraut, because that it's a normal way to eat it as sauerkraut. So therefore you'd say hadama on the same thing. Salted vegetables are also considered cooked for this purpose.